On this beautiful Arizona Saturday morning, Ron Wolfley's joining us in studio to get everyone's goosebumps and hair on the back of their neck standing up because it is time for professional football. And 12 years behind the mic with the Cardinals, I'm sure each one of those years you had something to look forward to, or something special, or a player, or something new, or a coach. What this year excites you most about this team?
Well, I would have to say the fact that you could talk about the Arizona Cardinals in the same sentence as saying Super Bowl. And, you know, every team says that. Every team, when they start the season and they show up for training camp, they say, we're going to the Super Bowl. You know, that's what we're doing, you know. And vows are made. Fists are thrust into the air and pointed to the sky. And people say, we're, you know, our goal is the Super Bowl. Well, of course everybody's goal is the Super Bowl. But I think there are probably over a handful of teams that actually have a shot, I think, of getting there. You could just look at the Carolina Panthers, though, because it is a year-to-year proposition in the NFL. You just look at the Panthers last year, Romy, and the fact that they were 7-8-1 going into last season. 7-8-1. And nobody thought the Carolina Panthers were going to go to the Super Bowl. Nobody thought that. And that's exactly what they did. That's the great thing about the NFL. It is the league of hope, because over and over and over again, you see the worst teams go to a first in their division. It can happen in a year if you make the right moves and some players develop at the right time. It can happen quickly. It's the league of hope because of that. But for the most part, you're probably talking about maybe eight teams that most analysts going into the season would say, you know what, if they got to the Super Bowl, it wouldn't surprise me. It wouldn't be a shock if this team got to the Super Bowl. And whether or not you win the Super Bowl, who knows? Because it's a one-game scenario. It's one and done. Who knows what's going to happen? So I think you can say that. I think you can say that about the Arizona Cardinals, that they're one of those seven or eight teams that you could say, yeah, I could see this team getting to the Super Bowl. It would not be a surprise. Many people are picking the Arizona Cardinals to be the NFC champions, to be the NFC representative in Super Bowl 51 in Houston. Many people, many analysts are picking the Cardinals because they're actually better on paper. So I think the whole narrative surrounding the Cardinals about Super Bowl or bust, that to me is probably the biggest story going into this season. And what I want to know is how they're going to handle that. How they're going to handle that expectation. Because it's one thing to be a team that you're the little engine that could. You're overachieving. And oh boy, all these people are just shocked at how well you're doing and the expectations. They were low expectations and you're exceeding those expectations. And it's quite another thing to go out there and be the favorite, that everyone's looking at you like, well, okay, go win now. This is the NFL, Romy. It's a difficult proposition to win. I don't care how talented your team is. It's a struggle to win. That's the great thing about the NFL. It's not a coronation. It's a competition. Most games are very competitive. Most games in the NFL are decided by a touchdown or less. It's competitive. It's not a coronation. But now all of a sudden, when you take a game that demands desperation and demands so much effort, and you make an assumption on the season and an assumption that, oh my goodness, are you kidding me? You're going to win your division and you're going to be the NFC champion and you're going to get to the Super Bowl. Why? Why is that true? Because I said it was true. What? Are you kidding me? That's what you face. You know the old saying about assumptions, Romy, right? You make a donkey out of you and me, right? You can't make an assumption on a season. And that's exactly what many people are doing. Not guys within the organization, not players within the organization, not coaches, not front office personnel. They're not making an assumption because they know how difficult it is to win in the NFL. But a lot of fans that are out there make an assumption based on what a lot of analysts are saying in regard to the Cardinals and the fact that they should make it to the Super Bowl. shoulda, woulda, coulda. What a joke that is. You got to prove it every week in the NFL. That's the biggest story going into this season, and that's what has me worried more than anything.
Now, on the field, both sides of the ball, you have 11 players. Starting on the offense, everyone knows Fitzgerald. That name is there.
Japanese fighting fish, that's what I call them. Deadly and single-minded of purpose.
I like that.
Yeah, well, you know, the Japanese fighting fish. That was some movie. What was that movie? I forget what it was. Naked Gun, I think.
Oh. we're going to have to look this up now. I'm curious.
Google it, my young crunks.
And what's a crunk?
It's a young kid, right, Romy? It's a young kid, basically. A kid that is, you know, I don't know.
Is that
he's
a New
18
York
years
word?
Old?
Is that a...
No, it's actually a word I picked up from some of the guys in the locker room. Crunk! It's just kind of crazy, that kind of thing, my young crunks. Anyways, we digress on that. You asked me a valid question before that. What was it?
The key players on the offense. We have Fitzgerald.
Yes! It was the key players on the offensive side of the ball. We have Larry Fitzgerald, the Japanese fighting fish. Then, of course, Carson Palmer. The entire key, I think, schematically, when you start talking about scheme, I think schematically the entire key for the Arizona Cardinals in 2016 is to protect Carson Palmer. Protect Carson Palmer. So much of the time, and you could say this about any team in the NFL, if you lose your starting quarterback, your odds of winning playoff games go right through the floor. Now, the Cardinals are very, very fortunate to have a capable backup in Drew Stanton. But Drew Stanton has not had a very good preseason, and he still isn't as prolific, obviously, as Carson Palmer. Otherwise, he'd be starting. So they got to protect Carson Palmer. That's critical. And Carson Palmer, when you give him that protection, he is as good, Romy, as anybody in the league, period. And then after that, I have to say David Johnson. David Johnson, have you seen this kid, Roman?
I have not.
David Johnson, 6'2".
Is this the backfield? I'm a big fan of the run.
I'm telling you, I know that you are. 6'2", and I would say probably 230 pounds, roughly, somewhere in there. And he's running a 4.4. Do you have any idea what a projectile you turn your body into when you weigh 230 pounds and you're running a 4.4? I mean, smash your face. Think of a frying pan hitting a face. Think of that. And that's what David Johnson is capable of doing. That and, of course, making you miss because he's very good. As a matter of fact, I would say David Johnson is the passepartout of the Arizona Cardinals offense. The key that unlocks all locks for the Cardinals, because he can run the ball and because you can motion him out of the backfield, Romy, and you can throw him the ball. He can run wide receiver routes down the field. He's got wide receiver hands. As a matter of fact, before the Cardinals drafted him out of Northern Iowa in the third round, he started his college career as a wide receiver because his hands were so big and because he could catch the ball so naturally. Well, he hasn't lost that ability in the least. He can beat you with the run, or he can beat you by catching the ball and then taking it 80 to the house. That's the reason why I say he is the key that unlocks all locks for the Cardinals going forward. Then.
There's more.
You thought I was done? Are you kidding me? We're riffing. Are we not riffing here on a Saturday morning? Then you've got John Brown. John Brown running a sub 4.4 40. You remember me saying that David Johnson was fast because he ran a 4.4 40. That's incredibly fast for a man that big. But John Brown running like a 4.3 5. And then you've got J.J. Nelson as well, Skeletor. That's what I call him. Skeletor's running a sub 4.4 as well. And then you've got Michael Floyd. Yeah, Michael Floyd is the guy that everyone forgets about because you got Larry Fitzgerald, you got Carson Palmer, you got David Johnson, you got John Brown and J.J. Nelson running sub 4.4s, which makes a defensive coordinator strap the diaper on and start bombing Imodium AD because of their speed. and it loosens everybody up in the secondary. And then you've got Michael Floyd running all these short to intermediate routes, breaking tackles and being very, very physical. The talent on the perimeter, the talent on the edge for the Cardinals is sick, for lack of a better way of saying it.
Well, I can see why you would have such expectations of being a Super Bowl contending team. Now, when I pick a team, when we do football pools at the office for fun,
yeah.
I...
You in a suicide pool where you pick one team, you can only pick one team?
No, and, you go through the whole roster
okay,
on the weekend.
Yeah, okay, you,
but when I look at team versus team,
yeah.
I'll go through the roster, and because I don't have the luxury as a parent of four children under 12.
Oh, let me see. You're actually working, Romy? Is that what you're saying?
You're working,
and you're actually being a dad? Well, you know what? You ought to wear that like a badge.
I don't know the teams well enough and the stats well enough. And
yeah.
Everything. I go through the roster, and I see which team has most SEC players in it.
You are such an SEC homer. You are, right? Because of the Louisiana thing, right?
Absolutely.
Were you actually born there?
No, I was born at Scottsdale Memorial Hospital.
Scottsdale, Romy, is a long, long way from Louisiana.
It is, but I was the first one born out of Louisiana since the Cajun people were exiled from Nova Scotia in the 1600s.
And
so,
are you serious, first of all, right now? Are you being serious?
I am.
You're telling your dad, right? You're telling me he was born in Louisiana,
Welsh.
Right? Welsh?
Welsh.
What
Between
do you mean,
Lake
Welsh?
Charles and Lafayette. That's a town name,
oh,
Welsh.
Oh, okay. I was like, Welsh? What are you talking about?
No,
you
know, he's not English? Scottish. No.
Okay, so, all right, Welsh.
And we still and have way, family. We still have season tickets to LSU Stadium, 48th yard line, 42nd row.
Who's going?
That my grandfather had when he was there at med school in the 50s.
Oh my gosh.
Grandmother was pregnant with child number one of eight that they had.
Okay.
When Billy Cannon returned the punt and beat Mississippi Ole Miss for the national championship
in
58.
Romeo, do you walk around and say, I guarantee? Do you say
no,
that?
I don't have that.
All right, look, Cajun food, by the way, we can talk about Cajun food right now. You want to get deadly serious? Is that what you want to do? I will talk about Cajun food right now. My favorite food, bar none. You don't have some gumbo, do you? You know what I mean?
Not with me.
You don't got
but
some
I
gumbo?
I do make a good gumbo.
Do you really?
I do.
Now, that's what I'm talking about right there. I know. How do you make it? I mean, do you make it... Do you got a little spice in the brown sauce there?
Well, first you start with your roux.
Oh, your roux.
Your
See,
roux.
I love that right there.
Roux.
Of course
that,
you start with
that,
roux.
That takes a long time. That's the killer. And that's the key to your entire flavor.
Totally. Right?
Absolutely.
So you don't like you don't have any Cajun. Do you put the not Cajun. You know what I'm talking
cayenne.
About. The cayenne. The cayenne. I can't even say it yet. I love it. The cayenne pepper, I'm telling you right now, I've poured it in my mouth before. That's how much I like cayenne pepper.
I don't use cayenne by itself necessarily. You're going to love the name of this seasoning.
Yeah.
It's a company out of Opelousas, Louisiana.
Yeah.
And it's called Slap Your Mama.
Romeo, I'm
going to have to bring you a can
you
of Slap
that?
Your Mama.
Can you actually say that on Slap Your Mama? Is that what exactly is that? A seasoning?
It is.
That's
it's a granular seasoning. It's similar like a Tony's. I'm sure you've seen the green bottle
okay,
of seasoning.
Okay, does it have a little kick to it?
Is it
that
does.
What you're, thus the Slap Your
it
Mama.
It does. It is similar to what people, if they're used
metaphorically
to Tony's.
Metaphorically speaking, of course.
Exactly. But it's not quite as salty. And then there's the liquid. When I go look at it, I go Louisiana Gold out of New Iberia.
Yeah. Bruce okay, if you don't product. Have gumbo, do you have some jambalaya?
Jambalaya is a great one.
Right.
I'm always a sucker for po' boy or anything fried. Fried
okay.
shrimp, fried crawfish,
yeah,
fried catfish.
You know, how about that? I love dirty rice. All right, dirty rice right now. I would, if it were possible, I'd snort dirty rice. I would. It is as good as it possibly can get. I'm just joking.
I may have to create a challenge here now. Stay tuned in the next segment as Ron Wolf snorts dirty rice.
metaphorically speaking, of course. You know.
So that brings me to the defensive side.
Boy, I've hit
and
the
on
wall
the
here
defense
on a Saturday
side,
morning.
On the defense side, You have a couple of our LSU boys.
Yes. Patrick Peterson, of course, and the Honey Badger.
Now,
Tyrann
both of
Mathieu.
Them wore number 7 at LSU, and you have to be voted to wear that number in Tiger Stadium. So both of those guys were elected by their teams to wear number
that
7.
Is,
that's a famous number
right.
on the defense side.
You know, honestly, I did not know that. I did not know that, and I should have known that, but I know this much. They certainly wore that number well, didn't they? Patrick Peterson is the best shutdown corner in the NFL right now. And I say that because most of the time there's a lot of teams, even though the league is changing and it's always in a state of flux, they're going to be playing man cover. And when you evaluate a corner, you're going to talk about man coverage and how good he is at man cover. Even though you've got corners like a Richard Sherman for Seattle that plays man and plays in a zone, a three deep zone, for the most part, when you talk about the best cornerbacks in the league, you're going to talk about man cover corners. And Patrick Peterson is a man cover corner of the highest degree. So I would pick him as a true shutdown corner, maybe the only true shutdown corner in the NFL. And then the Honey Badger is all about versatility. And versatility is a buzzword you're going to hear. As a matter of fact, if you show up at a game, somebody's hosting a viewing of a game and they're having a party, whether it's not a Super Bowl party, but it just happens to be a party, a football party during the week. If you show up, say two things if you want to sound brilliant. Okay, Romy? Two things.
Two things.
First of all, say, well, versatility. You've got to have versatility in the back end. Say that. Even though you don't know what it means, just say you got to have versatility in the back end, okay? And Honey Badger provides the Arizona Cardinals versatility with playing like a cornerback where he can line up over a guy in the slot and play man cover, or he can tackle like a safety. Because typically you don't get them both. You don't get a corner that tackles like a safety, and you don't get a safety that can cover man cover like a cornerback can. But Badger doesn't bowl. So you say that. That's number one. Say versatility. You need versatility.
Versatility in the back.
Romy, that's what I'm talking about right there. Versatility in the back end. And everyone will look at you, whoa, man, I'm not going to ask. I'm not going to ask what he means by that because it'll make me look stupid. That's number one. And the second thing is this. You got to be able to rush 4 and drop 7. Why in the world? You can blitz. You can bring dogs. You can blitz, but you got to be able to rush 4 and drop 7. Why? I don't know why. They got no chance if you can't rush 4 and drop 7. Just leave it at that right there, and you will shut the mouths of everybody that is in there. And if you want to get really greasy, if you really want to impress them, Romy, throw in a fire zone. Oh, I've never seen so many fire zones in my life. Again, people won't ask you anything. They're not going to ask you anything. Oh yeah.
No, they're not. But I'm going to ask you just for the sake of the people listening so they know. What's a fire zone?
A fire zone basically is you're probably going to rush 5 in a fire zone. Most likely you're going to rush 5 guys. But what you're going to do is you're going to take a defensive lineman or a pass rusher that was assumed to be rushing the pass. And all of a sudden, he's going to drop out into coverage. Even a big guy. You see this all the time. You see these big guys. They actually put their hand in the dirt like they're going to rush the passer. And boom, on a snap of a ball, they'll take one step forward to try to engage whoever it is that's going to block them. And then you're going to bring pressure from somewhere else. And then he'll drop out in play zone behind it. Now, typically on the perimeter, you've got man-to-man on the outside, unless that receiver off the ball on a fire zone comes into the middle of the field right now off the snap of the ball, then he'll let him go. And that is how the fire zone works. If he comes up the field at all, he's got a man cover in a fire zone. It gets a little technical. It's the reason why if somebody does ask you, what's a fire zone, Romy? You know what you say to them? It's a little technical. I don't want to get into it.
Okay.